This week is Parshas Parah. So there are the four readings that we do. We read the Shkolim, the Shekels before Rosh Chodesh Adar, and then there's the Zohar reading. We remember what Amalek did to us. And this week is the Parah reading. We read the chapter of the Red Heifer, and then the next reading is Parshas HaChodesh, where it talks about the new moon of the month of Nisan and preparing for Pesach. So we actually have learned this Medrash a number of times in the past when we were learning the Me'ah Shiloyach. The Medrash says, Zois Chukas HaPesach, the Torah tells us this is the statute of the Korban Pesach, Kol Ben Nechal HaYoichal Boy, any stranger is not allowed to eat it. So the Medrash brings a story of King David. David Amel says, Master of the world, when I am busy learning the Torah, please protect me from my Yetzirah, from my evil desires, because by the time it's finished with me, I'm making so many errors, I'm embarrassed. So Yehi Libi Tomim Bechukecho, let my, he quotes a verse from Psalm 119, let my heart be whole in your statutes, Leman Loin Evoish, in order that I not be embarrassed. So that's the first part of the Medrash. Then the Medrash says, Dova Acha, another meaning. It doesn't mean that King David said, please God, protect me from, you know, my internal conflicts when I am learning Torah. But Yehi Libi Tomim Bechukecho, let my heart be whole with your statutes. This refers to the two statutes of the Pesach and the Parah Adumah, because they're very similar. Because the Torah tells us, Zois Chukas HaPesach, this is the statute of the Pesach. And with the red heifer, it says this is the statute of the red heifer. And you can't tell by looking at them which is the greater. So he gives the Medrash says, you know, there's a moshel, an example of two matrons who resemble one another, and they're walking together, and they look the same. Mi gedoyle mizu, who is the greater? Oysa shechavata melava oysa al beisa vahilecha sachria. The one who her friend is accompanying her home and is walking with her to her home, and then when she's seen her neighbor home, then she goes to her own house. So the one who's being accompanied, she's the greater. So it is with the Pesach, that it says chukah, a statute, or Parah Adumah, and then with the red heifer it says statute. You don't know which is the greater. So I'll tell you which is the greater. The Parah Adumah, the red heifer, is the greater because the Pesach requires the Parah Adumah, because everybody has to purify themselves before Yontif so that they can go to Yerushalayim and eat the Paschal lamb. They have to be sprinkled with the ashes of the red heifer, so therefore the red heifer is greater. So this is the meaning of Kol ben nechal ayoch boy, no stranger should eat it. This is a very difficult medrash to understand. First of all, because we seem to have lost the plot with King David, who says, Yehi Libi Tomim Bechukecho, let my heart be whole with your statutes, and then brings these two statutes, the one of the Pesach and the red heifer, but doesn't really explain, doesn't bring it all back together again. And then the way the Medrash ends. And in the past, when we've learned this Medrash, we've learned with the Me'ah Shiloyach. And the Me'ah Shiloyach says that these two statutes, and generally speaking, when we talk about a chukah in the Torah, we talk about a statute, we're talking about a mitzvah that has no reason. You can't find a logical explanation for a mitzvah, then we call it a chukah, statute, meaning that's just something God commanded and that's it. So by the red heifer, we know, everybody knows, it's a classic example of a chukah, because somebody who's come in touch with death has like this residual death that's attached to them, and then they can't go into the temple and they can't be involved in many of the rituals that are associated with the temple. So you have to go to Yerushalayim or wherever there was a repository of the ashes of the red heifer that were mixed with water and sprinkled on the third day. On the seventh day you went to mikveh, you became tahor, cleansed, and then you could go to the Beis HaMikdash, to the temple, and take part in the ritual. The thing was that whoever touched the ashes of the red heifer and whoever did the sprinkling, they themselves became tamei and then had to go to the mikveh themselves. They weren't allowed to go into the temple. So it's a chukah, it's a real statute, because it doesn't make sense, right? It cleans those who are dirty, so to speak, and it dirties those who are clean. Well, if it makes the person who sprinkles and who touches and who carries, if it makes him tamei, makes him unclean, then how could it then, by sprinkling it on somebody, make that person clean? Not logical. So I can understand why the Pora Aduma, why the red heifer, is considered a classic example of a chukah. But why is a carbon Pesach considered a classic example of a chukah? That King David says, Libi tamim b'chukecha, my heart should be whole in your statutes, the Porah and the Pesach, leman lein evosh, in order that I not be embarrassed. So, in the Meir Shiloach that we probably learned this 3 or 4 years ago, he brings the Medrash and he gives us an interpretation. He says these two statutes of the red heifer and the Pesach correspond to the first two of the Ten Commandments. The Paschal Lamb corresponds to the first, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God, your God, who brought you out from the land of Egypt. And the Pora Adumo, the red heifer, corresponds to the second of Lo Yielcho, you shall have no other God. And the truth is that the proper way around is that a person should first cleanse himself of all evil and then approach God, and out of the kindness of God, the first commandment is first, because the truth is, who can ever reach a level of completely cleansing themselves of evil? And the emesis also says, the Ishbitzer, the truth is that you can't really understand who God is so long as you're holding on to the bad. So long as a person, you know, if I'm stealing, if I'm shoplifting, if I'm cheating in business, then I don't really believe in God. I mean, how could I believe in God? I don't believe God is watching, or I don't believe God cares, or I don't believe that God, you know, is really involved. If I'm doing things wrong, then it means there's something lacking in my beliefs in God. So really, I should have to fulfill in complete wholeness the second commandment of you shall have no other gods before I come to the first one. And the Ishbitzer says that the first commandment corresponds to Moshe Rabbeinu, that the job of Moses was to let the whole world know that God is God. And the second, thou shalt not worship other gods, corresponds to Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva's job was to teach us how to avoid all the things that we're not supposed to do. And so Rabbi Akiva formulates all the boundaries, the fences, and the restrictions and prohibitions of Isvahetan, Tomen Torah, all the things that we recognize as Judaism because our lives are circumvented in everything we do with the halacha, that this can be traced back to Rabbi Akiva. But all he was trying to do was help us into through that second commandment to come to be able to be ready for the first commandment. And the truth is, we should have to do the second commandment first, but it's a kindness of God that he said, you know what, you can come straight to the first commandment no matter where you're up to. So if that's the case, then this medrash that the Ishbitz actually brings doesn't really make sense, because the Ishbitz is saying that the Pesach corresponds to the first commandment, which is definitely the most important one. Purah corresponds to the second commandment, which is only there, which should be first, but it's not, because... So then, even the reading of the Medrash in the original Hebrew becomes hard, unless we read part of it that till now we've read it as a question, as a statement, we would read it as a question. So you have two matrons who are walking side by side, and you can't tell which one is the greater, which one is the lesser. So you see which one is accompanying the other one, and the one who's being accompanied is the greater. And so you have the Pesach and the Poro, you have the Pesach and the red heifer, and we don't know which is greater. The red heifer that those who are going to eat the Pesach need it. So if we read it as a question, but then it's not really very satisfying. But that's clear how the Ishbitz wants to read it. The reason I'm mentioning it is because his children and his grandchildren are still trying to understand what it was that the Zayde, that the grandfather meant with this insight. So in the Me'er Shelech, he brings down a medrash, the Gemara Menachos, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven, he saw the God tying these crowns on the letters, and he asks, what's it about? And God tells him about Rabbi Akiva. So when Moshe is given a vision of Rabbi Akiva's classes, and Moshe gets to sit in the back row and listen to what's going on, he thinks to himself, Rabbi Akiva's so great. Look what he's done. He's made this huge architecture, this huge thing out of the Torah, which is, you know, why isn't he the one who God chose to give the Torah to the Jewish people? And then the Gemara says, until they came to one halacha, and a student asked Rabbi Akiva, where's that from? And he said, oh, halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. This is a halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. And then Moshe Rabbeinu felt better. We're not actually told which halacha it was. So the Ishbitz says that really the process was Rabbi Akiva is so great, but all he's doing is preparing us for the real Kabbalah Satorah, which is, I am God, your God, who brought you out of Egypt. And nothing that Rabbi Akiva taught or created or nothing, none of his innovations were really anything but a way of approaching the first commandment. So it's really, even though the second commandment is greater, it's bigger, there's more to it. It's like the whole of Rabbi Akiva's life and his yeshiva and his students, they're all working on the second commandment of this you should do, this you shouldn't do, and this you should avoid, and this. Nevertheless, the one halacha, which is the halacha l'Moshe Mesinai, which is really what Moshe is about, that's the most important one, and that's, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. So, it's interesting that these two of all the statutes, and there's plenty of statutes in the Torah. There are many things in the Torah that are called chok. Why the Pesach and the Pura Aduma, why they come together? So the Neois Desha, who was the son of the Ishbitz, before we go there, the Pasuk actually says like this. If you look in the Torah, in Exodus chapter 12, verse 43, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe v'Aaron, God said to Moshe and Aaron, Zois chukas ha-posach, this is the statute of the Pesach, kol ben necho lo yoichel boy. No son of a stranger shall eat it. V'chol eved ish, if a person has, you know, slaves and maidservants, they can eat it. Toshav v'socher, just a stranger who's passing through town, lo yoichel bo, is not allowed to eat it. Bebayis echod ye'ochel, it should be eaten in one house. Lo yisoytzi min habayis min habos achutza, you're not allowed to take any of the meat or the bones, anything outside the house. You've got to keep the lamb inside the house, and nobody should break any bones. And all the congregation of Israel should do it. V'chiyogur itcho ger, and if there's a stranger who's come to live with you, meaning somebody wants to be Jewish, for also Pesach L'Shem, and he wants to make the Korban Pesach, so he has to go through the circumcision ceremony together with everybody else, and then he can come and eat the Korban Pesach like anybody else. For Orel, but somebody who's not circumcised shouldn't eat it. So if we've got such a detailed list of who can eat and who can't, then what does it, why, how, what's this, the opening phrase? God says to Moshe and Aaron, this is the chukah, this is the statute of the Pesach, kol ben necho lo yoichel bo, any stranger should not eat of it. And then why later start, if you say that, then what's the purpose of then elucidating who can and who can't? And if you're going to elucidate who can and who can't, exactly why do we have to have that phrase on the end of the pasuk, as though God is telling Moshe, you know what the real secret of the Pesach is? You know what the real chukah, the real statute is? Kol ben necha lo yoichel boy. That this ben necha is not allowed to eat it. That seems to be the most mysterious thing about it. And in fact, if we look at the Targum says, this is the gezeira, this is the secret of the Pesach, kol ba Yisrael di yishtamad lo yechel be. Any Jew that denies God is not allowed to eat it. So this is a very strange thing. Here you have a mitzvah that everybody is commanded to do, and even a person's slaves and maidservants are allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. And if a stranger comes and wants to join the Jewish people, all he has to do is homoil yimoil, he has to circumcise himself, and if it's a woman, she just has to go to the mikveh, and she can eat Korban Pesach too. But a Jew, whose father may be chief rabbi, but he himself doesn't want to keep the Torah mitzvahs, he's estranged. He's not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. He has to fast on Yom Kippur, you know, and you know, if he marries, if he says to a woman, Harriet Mekadeshes, she's married to him, and he has to give her a get if he wants to divorce her. So he doesn't have the laws of a goy, he doesn't have the laws of a non-Jew, of a Gentile. But with the respect to eating the Korban Pesach, he's like a Gentile, he's like a goy. That's the chukah of the Pesach, says the son of the Ishbitzer. That's what this whole medrash is about. Because that doesn't really make sense. Because we find when Moshe and the Yidden came out of Egypt, millions of people came out of Egypt at the same time. And the sea split for them. And all the miracles that happened for us happened for them. But they weren't allowed to eat the carbon Pesach. So what's this about? So the Neues Deutsches says like this. The paradox, because a chukah, a statute, seems to suggest that there's elements that are contradictory. And that's why you can't understand it, not just because you're not given a reason, but once you start to examine the thing itself, it seems contradictory. And that's the paradigm of contradiction is that we find by the Par Aduma that even though it cleanses the dirty person, it dirties the clean person. So it says like this. One of the traditions that we're given is that the Par Aduma, that the red heifer, is associated with the Maaseh Egel. It's associated with the making of the golden calf and the worship of the golden calf. And the Medrash says, you know, let the mother, referring to the red heifer, come and clean the dirt of that her child has made, meaning the golden calf. So he says like this, a very interesting insight. He says, every sin that the Jewish people are recorded in the Torah as having made these massive blunders, you know, whether it's worshipping the golden calf or whether it's failing to, you know, to go into the land of Canaan when they sent the spies and whatever great blunders, and the Torah is full of them. Always something good came out of it. What was the good that came out of the worshipping the gold calf? So he says, when they said, we want gods that will walk in front of us, asheyelchu lefaneinu, that will walk in front of our face. We don't want God that's in the heaven, that's somewhere that Moshe has to go on a 40-day jaunt to speak to him. We want God right here walking with us. And what happens? We get the Mishkan afterwards. Moshe comes down on Yom Kippur with forgiveness, and the day after Yom Kippur we start building a tabernacle v'asul l'migdash v'shechanti v'soichom, says God. So make me a place and I'll dwell among you. Had we not sinned with the golden calf, we wouldn't have been building the Mishkan. So something good came from it. And God agreed. Okay? And he says another thing. We gathered on Aaron and we said, you make it for us. You be the one who build the altar. And that's how it stayed. You know, Moshe becomes the Shaliach Tzibah. He becomes our messenger to God. He becomes the high priest. Just that insight alone is a chiddush. It's radical. So something good came from worshipping the golden calf, that we got the Mishkan and we got Aaron as the Kohen Gadol, as the Shliach Tzibur, as the messenger of the congregation. So if deep down it's such a good thing, and the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, is sort of like the key to unlocking all the good that comes out of the golden calf, then why does it make the person who actually does the ritual, why does it make him tamei unclean? And then he says the same thing applies to the Korban Pesach. Why is it called Pesach? Because Passover, right? What's the idea of Passover? Yeah, on one level, it's just because God passes over our houses when he smites the Egyptians. which is on one level, but it also means that he passed over us because really we didn't deserve to be redeemed. We didn't really deserve that God. I mean, if God would have looked at us, we wouldn't have been in any better, you know, we wouldn't have looked any better than those Egyptians, because we were idol worshippers too. Nevertheless, God jumps over us and smites the Egyptians. So if we ourselves were not so holy, we ourselves were not so monotheistic, we weren't really God worshippers. If that's the case, then why does the Torah say Kol ben nechal ayoichal boy? The estranged Jew, why is he not allowed to eat it? We were all estranged. Weren't we all estranged? Isn't that the meaning of the word Pesach, is to jump over and not to look at, that God jumped over and didn't examine us and say, are you worthy of being redeemed? But everybody who was sitting in that house around the Korban Pesach, everybody was safe, and all the people elsewhere were not. So that's a very similar paradox, he says, to that of the red heifer, that can make the person who's dirty clean and make the person who's clean dirty. So here with the Korban Pesach, you have the person who you're not looking at, you know, he gets through, but the person you are looking at, it's a very similar thing. If you believe that the whole meaning of Pesach is that God redeems us even though we're not deserving, and that really is it, you know, because nobody who's got any sense really thinks that the good things that happen to us because we deserve it, right? It's grace. Am I better than somebody else? That I, last Shabbos, I kept Shabbos, right? It's because I'm better than somebody else? No. There's a lot of very good people out there. So how come I was given the gift of Shabbos? I don't know. It's a gift. Do I deserve it? Hard to say. I wouldn't like anybody to examine my heart and see, you know, Hershey, do you really deserve to have a Shabbos? I would hate somebody to look at me like that. So if that's the meaning of Pesach, to remind us that God redeems us even though we're not necessarily worthy of redemption, then why does the Torah say, Kol ben nechal layoichal boy, anybody who's estranged should not eat the Korban Pesach? So, he says, why is it really that the estranged person is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach? So, you know, when it comes to eating, this is something that we were learning in Parshas Purim many times, the idea of the red heifer, you take this cow, or this heifer, and you burn it until it's just dust, ashes, and take the ashes and sprinkle them on pure water. So what does it taste like? It tastes like death, you know. It tastes like burned. It's just ashes. So if you and I, you know, if I take some ashes from the fireplace and I put them in my mouth, I mean, you know, that's like a paradigm of, like, no taste. It tastes like ashes. It does not taste alive. But when it comes to God, there's really no difference between the molecules of these ashes and the molecules of the cow that's walking around. For God, you know, it doesn't take anything to turn one into death or one into life. And Moshe Rabbeinu, we were learning that Moshe, because he never worshipped the golden calf, he never worshipped in his life, he never worshipped idols, he could taste the life even in the ashes. Like when he put ashes in his mouth, these ashes of the red heifer, to him, it could taste like steak. Or in some way, he could taste the life force in it. He would say, this I can taste the life in it. It's like sherbet. When I put it in my mouth, what does it taste like? It tastes like ashes, right? Because Moshe Rabbeinu never tasted the taste of idol worship. He'd never tasted the taste of paganism. And you know, there's something about certain tastes that ruin our taste. There are certain things that you can stick in your mouth that then it ruins your taste buds for every other thing. I know the Tolzan Rebbe, Rebbe Aaron Roth, he grew up in Tzfat in the 1920s. And all his life, he died in the 90s, all his life he regretted that once when he was a kid, somebody gave him an ice lolly, an ice cream, or some glieder, something ice, probably an ice lolly, right? So, and all his life he regretted it, because there's something about that sickly sweetness of it that he could no longer after that get rid of the memory of that taste, and everything that he ate afterwards was somehow tainted by having eaten that ice lolly, and all his life he regretted it. And I was thinking about it, you know, learning this, that as Shlomo used to say, once you've tasted Avodah Zorah, once you've tasted paganism, then there's something goes dead in your taste buds. So Moshe Rabbeinu, he could, when we say that Moshe Rabbeinu knew the reason of the Poradum, the Tam, it also means he knew the taste. He could taste the life in it. So the two are very similar. The Poradum and the Chukas HaPesach is because, unlike other Karbanot that can be brought, if most of the Jewish people are Tamei, then there are certain Karbanot that can be brought in the temple, but they can't be eaten. The Kohen doesn't eat it, they just get burned. But the Karban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, if it is brought betuma, if most of the Jewish people are tamei of, you know, let's say there's been a war and everybody's like been touching dead bodies or a plague or something like that, and so most of the Jewish people, like today, if Mashiach comes a week before Pesach and we want to make the Korban Pesach and we don't have time to be metaher ourselves with the ashes of the red heifer because we haven't found a red heifer, so we could make the Korban Pesach because most of the Jewish people are tamei, have come in touch with death. Not only could we sacrifice the Korban Pesach, but then we could take it home to our homes in Yerushalayim and we could eat it. Because the Korban Pesach is not brought to be sacrificed and to be burned, but to be eaten. If we're talking about eating as being the most essential ingredient of the sacrifice or the ritual of the Korban Pesach is the eating, then we need to understand what it means to eat the Korban Pesach. So, there are two essential things. The Erev Rav, this mixed multitude of people who came out of Egypt with us, they weren't allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. Why? Because they never suffered. They never suffered in Egypt the way we did. When you've suffered, things taste different. To taste the real taste of Pesach, you have to have suffered bizyoinus. The Ishbitzer uses the word bizyoinus. You have to have suffered being shamed, being disgraced. We all know what it feels like, right? And the essential experience of being a Jew throughout the thousands of years is that, you know, oh, you're a Jew. You're fair game for being made fun of, for being mistreated, for being hurt, and, you know, for being shamed. So the Erev Rav, this mixed multitude of people who came out, even though the sea split for them, and all the miracles happened for them, but they couldn't eat the Pesach because they couldn't eat it. Because it's not about swallowing it, it's about tasting. What is it you're supposed to taste? You're supposed to taste the taste of God not looking at your sins, but of God looking at you as an individual and saying, I choose you. That's the taste of Korban Pesach. That's why the Yidden are told, you know, before you come to Korban Pesach, you have to sprinkle yourself with the ashes of the Pura Aduma. Because who of us can really look at ourselves, not in the general, not in the cloud, but in the prat, in the detail, and say, you know, God, I know that you chose me even though I didn't deserve to be chosen, and I know that you're redeeming me even though I don't deserve to be redeemed. In order to taste that taste of redemption, we first have to learn how to taste the Pura Aduma. We first have to learn how to understand the meaning of the red heifer, how to understand the meaning of, you know, what it is to try and undo the eating, the worshipping of the golden calf. How can we undo the worshipping of the golden calf? How can we try and taste in the ashes the living cow? How can we understand the depth of wanting to be with God, to be in the presence of God so much that we make such a giant blunder as worshipping the golden calf that comes out of our desire, Elohim asher yelchu lefoneinu, because we really want to be in the presence of God and we don't want a distant God, and we're so passionate about wanting to be in the presence of God that we do stupid things, and we so want to have a way of speaking to God that we make Aaron our messenger, because Aaron is the person who can express love. He's oyev sholem v'roidev sholem v'oyev isabriyos mekarvan. Aaron expresses so much love and can bring out from us so much love, and that's really what we want to bring to God, because we don't know anything, we don't know anything else. That's the only thing that we have with which to worship God, and really without the presence of Aaron we can't even access the depth of our love. These are the things that the Pura Aduma, that the red heifer is trying to remind us that we did. And that somehow inside there, if we can find those things inside ourselves, it will turn out that we never worshipped the golden calf, and then we are clean. And we'll be able to taste in the ashes the life. When we've succeeded in doing that, then we can come to the Pesach and sit at the table at the Seder with the Korban Pesach, with the Paschal Lamb, and eat it. And in that eating, taste the grace of what it feels like, each of us, you and me. So I'll eat this piece of Korban Pesach and I will feel the redemption. I will feel God jumping over my sins, not looking at them, but looking at me and saying, Heshi, I want you. So Ben Necher, somebody who's estranged, can't do that, can't get there. Shkoyach.